Michael Knight.
It's a Tax Tips Thursday, so if you want to be part of the show, call right now and talk with myself and Sean Patton. 663-5656, 509-663-5656. Did I give you the number? It's 509-663-5656. Now I ask you, consider this. How did tax get started? I mean, when you think about it, who came up with that idea? It's sort of a mandatory financial charge or some other type of levy imposed by you, in, by way of your government. You as an individual or either legal entity like a corporation, you got to pay. Government organization needs its money. Failure to pay along with evasion or resistance of taxation is punishable by law. So there's another reason to pay. Taxes consist of direct or indirect taxes that you have to pay in money or its labor equivalent. In some countries, you get to work it off, I guess, on the rock pile. It's been suggested that tax resistance played a significant role in the collapse of several empires. So if you think just being resistant to taxes is a great idea, in the past, it did not work out, even though Egyptian, Roman, Spanish, and Aztec empires probably fell because of their tax systems. People get fed up. They don't pay. They refuse to negotiate. And before you know it, here come the Visigoths. Here come the Zapotecs. And so much for your empire, Booby. Let's go back to 578, the residents of Limoges, encouraged by the local clergy who already weren't paying taxes, rioted and destroyed all the tax-collecting paraphernalia, and they threatened the assessor. Threatened the assessor? My God, have you no manners? 1041, the residents of Worcester rebelled against the tax being collected by King Hathanut. How upset were they? Well, they killed two of the king's tax collectors. So Hathanut responded by burning Worcester to the ground. No taxes, no town. So a cautionary tale. You angered the king at your own peril. 1296, Pope Boniface VIII issued his Clericus Laicos, which prohibited secular governments from taxing, you'll never guess what. Yeah, right, churches. You need the permission of the Pope if you want to tax the church, and he prohibited church officials from paying the tax. So did the Pope get permission? No. No, he did not. 1381, the famous Peasants' Revolt occurred in England. Wat Tyler was the leader. He led an uprising over the new poll tax. They marched an army of 10,000 peasants. They went from Kent to Canterbury. They went to London. They beheaded the Archbishop. They demanded radical concessions from King Richard II. And during the negotiations, King Richard II said, "You can have whatever you want. Sure, I'll negotiate." Then he killed Wat Tyler and publicly beheaded him. And then he retracted all of the concessions he had previously made. Once again, remember, we're dealing with a king. So Bob's your uncle. What tax mood are you in today? You feel like destroying the paraphernalia? You want to burn the town to the ground? You want to talk turkey to the Visigoths or the king? Or do you want to beg forgiveness from the king? Yeah, I know. That's why we're talking right now with Sean Patton, who's here to say, look, I can help you pay your taxes. That way you don't have to burn the town. You don't have to talk to the king. And the Visigoths won't get you, even though you thought you were going to get away. Am I right about that, Sean?
That was quite the intro, Michael. I don't know.
Well,
good question.
We all know the people go through the mood where that's it. I'm not paying. I'll go to prison first. But other ugly things will happen before you get to prison. So just think about it in terms of history. Tax revolts do not work out in the long run.
Yeah, I think that, we're all responsible, obviously, to pay into the system. Our job or my job is to help clients mitigate that tax liability as best as possible under the laws and the rules.
That's why once a week during tax season, I turn to you and the other men from Cordell-Narer and women on occasion who know their onions when it comes to the tax laws. And now let's get a phone call or two. If you want to talk with Sean about the new 1040, maybe you've done your taxes, maybe you haven't even looked at them. Here's the number to ring us, 509-663-5656. It's 509-663-5656, and we'll have a word or two with Sean. You guys are getting busy, I hear.
We are getting busy. It's that time of year where we've crossed the March beginning threshold there and into the first week, and so work starts to pile up pretty good as we approach that March 15 deadline for pass-through businesses and then, the April 15th deadline for individuals and corporations that pay tax. So we
didn't get an extra couple days this year. Last time it was like the 18th because of holidays and weekends and everything, but not this year.
Right. No extra days this week. The 15th of April actually falls on a weekday, and not a government holiday either, so we don't have any extra days. But speaking of extended deadlines,
my favorite document from the IRS.
Yeah, I don't know that we were debating this at the office. I'm not sure this has ever happened before. But on the evening of February 28th, the IRS delayed the deadline for farmers. Remember, they've got that special March 1st deadline. If they don't file estimated tax payments, they can file and pay their tax return by March 1st each year.
That was not really big in the news. We didn't hear about that.
It was in the news, in tax circles and stuff like that. Sure, it was big news. But, for everybody else, I'm not sure that it hit the front page of
USA
Today.
Why did they delay?
They basically just said that the burden was too large, not having all of the final regulations out with respect to tax law changes in 2018, that it would be onerous for a farmer to be able to have, enough time to be able to calculate properly and submit their return and pay the tax due.
Is that unusual?
On March 1st. Well, it's unusual for them to extend a deadline, that's for sure. I wouldn't count on them extending April 15th.
Because that would not be onerous. It would be for me, but not for them.
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, we still have word of potential tax extender, legislation still out there, that hasn't been part of a bill that's passed so far. And there's still, things popping up here and there where some deductions that sunsetted and went away could possibly come back. We don't know if that's really going to happen or not, but it puts an interesting spin on, filing tax returns for clients or individuals that are in the process of filing their own tax return. Whether or not they should go ahead and file that tax return now or should they wait? Given that deduction might pop up later, it would only result in somebody having to amend their return to take advantage of it. So, the circumstances are quite different in each scenario, and of course there's not a lot of deductions we're speaking of, but like a mortgage insurance that was suspended, many people pay mortgage insurance, and so that's not a deduction so far. It's listed as reserved on the form Schedule A. The line still exists. They could put it in at any time. But currently, you're not going to get a deduction for that. But if they were to pass something in some bipartisan bill here in the near future and let that flow through, then, taxpayers would be able to take advantage of it, which could reduce their tax liability in some circumstances. So, we're a little late in the game here, being into the first week of March for those types of things to happen. But, I wouldn't put them past them for maybe doing something like that. Who knows?
That's the voice of authority, Sean Patton from Court Herald Narrative. You have a question about taxes? I bet you do. But you don't know the number. Okay, I can help. 509-663-5656. 663-5656. Are you suggesting there are members of Congress that have legislation proposed that would change some of the tax laws, but it hasn't been voted on?
Yeah, there's all sorts of proposals that pop up all the time. But one of these, the tax extender legislations, was last extended through the end of 2017. That was not part of what got passed in 2018 at all. But many have thought that those deductions might come to pass, or those extensions on those bills might come to pass at some point. Now, every day that goes by, we've got less and less thought that might happen, but we're still hearing that there are some threats that could come around. So
this brings up a topic that other people might think about. They miss a deduction in 2017 and they don't find out about it till 2018. They could have deducted it in 2017. Can you go back?
Sure. Yeah. You can amend your tax return, certainly, to claim a refund up to 3 years beyond the due date of your tax return. So certainly if you did file a 2017 tax return, and you didn't take advantage of, let's say, one of the extender packages that came on late, I can't remember, it was late when it got approved. I want to say late January, early February of 18 when they, passed that extender legislation. Could have been a little earlier. Can't recall quite that far back, but, it was late. It wasn't something that we really knew about going into the new year. And certainly those that, file the tax return without taking advantage of that, might be due, an additional refund. So, Yes, I would go back and do that for 2017 if somebody hadn't. But at this point, for 2018, it's up in the air. So if you've got your tax return done, which in some circumstances we have some clients in the office currently like that, you know, you have to advise them, hey, this is the risk is that we file today and without the deduction. Then you have to file in the future, you know, an amendment if you want to take advantage of it. So right now we're not up against the deadline, so you can wait that out a little bit. But we're getting closer and closer to the day. So
how does the IRS handle that? If I missed the deduction, just like we've been discussing, didn't do it 2017, I was able to do it, but I didn't. 2018, I make the revisions. But I paid them $1,000, and I wouldn't have paid them anything. They would have paid me if that deduction had been right. How do we square that?
Well, you're going to file an amended tax return. It goes on a form 1040X, and you provide a new copy of the 1040 along with the previous copy that you filed to kind of give them the trail of breadcrumbs, so to speak, as to what has been changed on the amended tax return along with a description. And you reconcile out just like on your original tax return all the payments that you've made to them, and the taxes due. And so if you owed some money and you had an additional deduction, typically that's gonna lead to a refund. And so you're gonna reconcile that out and request a refund through that form.
I thought you'd get a letter saying, thank you for the $1,000 that you wouldn't have otherwise sent. We will hold on to this in advance in the future, whatever tax you owe, just subtract a grand from it and we'll be square.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work like that. You got to reconcile everything out and they'll send you back a refund, but you can't put one on the book, so to speak.
You can't just wait.
Right. Well, you don't want to, because they're not going to contact you and say, hey, look, we actually owe you some money. That
would be unusual.
That generally doesn't happen unless, you know, taxpayers file the form, with a mathematical error, on it, which is the IRS can calculate quickly and figure out that there's been a mistake. When that happens, sure, I've seen letters come back that, you know, for clients that may have prepared their own return and there might have been a miscalculation there where the IRS is saying, hey, we fixed this for you on your behalf. Check is in the mail. But you don't see that very often because, you know, most people are filing their tax returns electronically, have software to prepare those. Most of the math calculations are going to be handled for you. So
that's Sean Patton. He's got the answer to your question. All you have to do is ask it by calling this number. 509-663-5656. Call Sean Patton, ask him a question about the taxes that you're about to pay, or maybe you already paid and you think you're going to get that $1,000 back. Oh, it's possible. But you don't know without asking the champ. 663-5656. That's the number to call. Last year at this time, we were hearing that the IRS was somewhat understaffed. There may be even fewer of them this year. We don't really know. And then they had the government shutdown, which affected them, and they may or may not be caught up based on what we know they're up to, because who knows what they're up to. Do you have any feelings about their work, the number of IRS agents that are on the case? Does it seem like they're staffed or understaffed?
Well, they're certainly understaffed. I don't think that's changed. Obviously, the government shutdown, you know, through late December, in January affected them greatly. I can't remember off the top of my head the exact number of pieces of mail, that, you know, had gone unresponded, but, it was a substantial number. So you can imagine, you know, going into one of their busiest seasons of the year, to, you know, have a month hiatus with only 12% of the workforce, you know, at the office, in January, that's going to be difficult to catch up on. So, we noticed that in our correspondence with them. You know, taxpayers, I'm sure, are noticing that even more. It's never been expedient to call the IRS over the phone. It certainly isn't any more expedient this year, given those circumstances. So they're definitely understaffed and have a lower, you know, budget to work with, and therefore that just takes more time for them to get back to the taxpayer and leads to really not as great of an experience that we might otherwise be able to have.
Customer service not top of the list over there at the IRS. You might ask, well, what does the mail have to do with the IRS shutting down? The mail is their preferred form of communication. They will not call you at home. They will not send a guy to deliver a message to your front door. They will write to you. And you have to write back to them. You have to respond by mail. That's their official form. So you know that there are a number of scams going around. I assume you are familiar with some of them. You have to be kind of gullible to take advantage of it. But also, people are afraid of the IRS in some instances. And if they get a call saying, you've screwed up, we're going to give you 2 days to fix this, we're coming, we're going to take the money, you got to send cash or a gift card or some other ridiculous comment that they make. But a lot of people fall for it, and especially older folks at this time of the year.
Yeah, it's a, that's a big problem and continues to be a big problem. Everything is not electronic. They try and be as electronic as possible these days, want most people to submit their tax returns electronically. They want you to request, you know, refunds to be direct deposited into your account. It's a little more secure, and obviously people get their refunds a little bit faster as well, not having to wait for the mail, but you're absolutely right. They still contact you via mail first before anything else, and they're never going to call you up front, never going to send you an email. None of those options are available unless you're already in contact with the IRS, and you know you're in contact with the right IRS.
And you already know your auditor by his first name.
Right. And so at that point, then maybe you could establish another means of communication with them. But for the most part, everything is done by mail. Even the amended forms we were speaking of, there's no electronic method to file an amended return. You've actually got to send that in the mail as well. There's still certain forms that can't be electronically filed, regardless if, you know, you're working for a firm like ours that's mandated to electronically file, based on the number of returns we submit. Even then, some forms and some returns, aren't ready for electronic processing yet. So they still have a ways to go there.
Let's ask a question of Sean Patton. He's the authority. It's Tax Tips Thursday. Here's my number, 509-663-5656. 509-663-5656. Call Sean, and when we come back, I'll tell you about a tax nightmare that I had. Yeah, I know. Entertainment.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Our very special guest today is Sean Patton from Cordell Nair. He's the tax freak. He knows it all. He knows the answer to your question even before you know the question. So call him now at 509-663-5656, 509-663-5656. We referred to tax fraud and other problems that are out there. I forgot completely about my nightmare. I got a notice from the IRS saying we believe someone has stolen your identity, and they've already filed your tax return. What gave it away was they had my Social Security number, but they didn't use my full name. They only used part of it. That was a dead giveaway. They didn't file jointly. They only had just me filing alone, so my wife got left out of it. And they were right. Someone had stolen my identity, a Russian gang filing just madly, whatever Social Security number they had, they just filed a tax return. And if they got a return, if they got their refund, that money just disappeared down the Russian gang rabbit hole, and it became really complicated for me because they said, now you may not file electronically because we're watching your account. You must deliver it in person. It has to be dated. You must prove your identity.
Right.
You must prove your wife's identity and deliver it by hand. So that was a little different, but that type of fraud is widespread.
It is, and it continues to happen, and you fell victim to one of the same stuff that our clients have over the years, and that's that, you know, somebody gets a batch of Social Security numbers, yep. And they just it's the shotgun approach, right? They just put them on a form and send them out and see if anything hits pay dirt. Unfortunately, just like you said, they got in line before you in filing your own tax return, and the IRS doesn't allow two people in line at the same time to be filed, especially electronically. So you go to file that tax return, and it says, nope, we already have one on file for you. Even if they know it's incorrect and have already communicated with you, they still can't process it. So just as you had to do, you have to prove your identity, file additional forms, and file support in order to be able to show that you are you. And after that happens, you do get a magical little IP PIN number which does help and assist in filing going forward, because in order for somebody to file a return under your number after that point, they need to have that five-digit PIN. It'd be nice if we all had that five-digit PIN just to begin with, if they're so so secret, but we don't. You have to, unfortunately, fall victim to identity theft before you get that type of protection. You can request one, a little bit of a process, but if you want to do that, you can. But most people that haven't had anything happen, you wouldn't worry about it until something did, and then unfortunately you got to go through that process. So
it is unfortunate because the IRS puts the onus and the burden of proof completely on the individual who's had his identity stolen. So it's a double punch. One, someone's got your identity already. They know your address. They know your social security number. They've already filed. Now, we assume that you are who you say you are, but the proof now and the burden of that proof is completely on you. We're not going to help you get out of this mess.
Exactly. And it's not just the tax return you have to be concerned about at that point. You've got all kinds of other identity issues that you need to think about, right? You know, credit card, you know, what other information could they have? And so, really takes you through a process of, you know, figuring out, making sure your credit score is still okay. Nobody's filed anything there, you know, on that you need to fix. It's really unfortunate because it just takes a lot of time and effort, to be able to correct, all of that stuff, as you know, firsthand.
When you have, acted on behalf of clients who have had the same problem, how do you proceed? Because you are official. Do you have to deliver it in person or?
You can send it in the mail, but you need to send all those same types of support along with it. So they're going to ask for several, you know, pieces of identification to be able to prove that it's you. So you don't necessarily have to go down to the office, but you do certainly need to file a lot of additional information in order to be able to verify that you are who you say you are.
And where is the nearest office if I have to show up in person? Is it Yakima or Seattle or where?
Good question. I think Yakima is still the nearest office to us. Yep. But I've never had to actually go physically down there, which is nice. So, but yeah, I believe that is still the closest.
That's because Sean Patton is a pro. And if you want to talk to the pro about taxes for this year, call now, 509-663-5656. 509-663-5656. When we come back, we have more to learn from Sean Patton about the 1040 and everything else going on for taxes this year. By the way, the deadline is when?
April 15th.
Oh, God.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 1246 at News Radio 560 KPQ. We have 38 degrees, 37 degrees outside. It'll be 38, I promise you, before it happens, because the sun is actually out in Wenatchee Town. My very special guest is Sean Patton. He's the tax expert from Cordell Nair. He's the man who will do your taxes if you need help this year. They're going to be doing my taxes if I can finally get organized. And that brings me to my question. What is organized? What does someone with deductions in a small business and things that have to be deduced that maybe in last year's were available, but maybe in this year are not available? They have to bring everything, don't they?
Yeah, I think to be organized, you really need to assess, you know, your whole situation. Even if you think you might not be able to take advantage of, you know, whether you itemize or take the stair and deduction, I think that it's worthwhile putting together that information to make sure, right? You know, being organized is really putting together everything that you have in order to make the best decisions possible.
So you need all your income, all your 1099, all your deductions, all your donations to Goodwill or whatever, and you really almost have to do the return yourself in pencil and then bring it to Sean for perusal, right?
Well, to know whether something, you know, is deductible or whether that income is taxable, you can generally assume that most income is. There are forms that are not. But as far as what deductions qualify, yes, do a little research or give somebody a call and ask to make sure, because you want to you know, make sure that you're taking advantage of everything that you might be able to. And in order to do that, you know, we generally assist clients by giving them an organizer. We actually call it an organizer, tax organizer, and it's a series of pages. It's a long document, but it really steps through, you know, most areas of the tax law and asks the client certain questions to be able to drum up whether or not they might have something that applies.
I think that's great, the organizer, and that has questions. Well, let's talk about what they would do with their 1099s. Is it pretty straightforward?
Well, yeah, as far as 1099s go, you know, obviously that document's being submitted to the IRS, as well. That was sent to you by a third party, and there's another copy that goes to the IRS. So the IRS is definitely going to want to know what that is, and make sure that it matches up with your tax return. You know, depending on whether maybe it was a rental that you had and you received a 1099 for rent income, or whether you're self-employed, and somebody was sending you a 1099 for services that you delivered to them, it's gonna, you know, differ as to what that 1099 relates to. Of course, there's multiple types of 1099 forms as well, not just earned income, but
all the R's, the B's, the A's, or whatever.
All the numbers and letters associated, you bet. So you've got your interest and dividends and capital gains and all those forms as well. And those obviously aren't earned income, but passive forms of income that, you need to report as well.
Let's see who's on the line. Hi, KPQ, you're on the air. Who's this, please?
Rex.
Rex, you have the floor, sir.
All right, so back when your identity got stolen, why did the IRS even process his refund or whatever they're trying to get if all of his W-2s didn't line up? And how would they get the wages for his W-2 and the withholding and all that stuff that they would have to do to have what I would call a valid return?
Great question, Rex.
They didn't process it. They flagged it as a problem because they knew who I was and they saw the names didn't match quite correctly. And
well, that's perfect. I like that answer.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, it does depend, and here's why, Rex, is that although you receive a copy of your W-2 and we all get ours, you know, by the end of January typically, the IRS actually doesn't receive a copy of that W-2 from the Social Security Administration until the summertime.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No. Is that,
well,
I mean,
that
how
is,
much sense
crazy.
Does that make?
So they have no cross-reference.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll let you go.
You bet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, great question. And it does amaze me and amazes everyone as to how some of this fraud can happen. But that's one of the examples of why, is that if you went online right now and you tried to pull a tax transcript of all the third-party documentation that got submitted to the IRS on your behalf, you're going to get a response from the IRS that says, we don't have anything yet.
Ah.
Right? And so that's how these fraudsters take advantage, is because the IRS, in your case, there were so many things wrong with the submission, right, that the computer was able to, you know, probably identify, wait a minute, this is way outside
something's
of what Michael usually files. Right.
Right.
Something's amiss. But if they had all the other right information and was just doing a fraudulent W-2 otherwise, but had everything else right, it's likely that that may have been processed because they didn't have anything to fact check it with.
And I didn't see all the paperwork, but I assume that they had phony material all the way through saying, I earned this much and the deductions were that much. And certainly there was a refund planned, I'm sure.
Sometimes they're not actually putting all that much effort into it. They're, like
right.
you said, they only had a couple pieces of your name.
Scattergun approach.
Yeah, they had your address, they had your Social Security number. They probably just made up a W-2 and
yes.
tried to get a quick refund, right? And so right. if they do that for enough people, it's worth their while. They're not going to spend a whole lot of time. They just want to see if they can get a quick couple $1,000 from 100,000 people. That's going to add up.
And because the Russian gang is such good citizens, they filed early. See, they got there before I did, hoping for a quick couple $100. And multiply that by however many returns they sent in that year, and God knows what they made on the deal.
Right. And so that's, you know, there's been stories you've heard of, you know, people, you know, filing tax returns that were in prison, right?
Oh, yes.
You know, and so anybody that has access, right, to the Internet these days and is capable with computer programming, et cetera, can do some pretty amazing things, and sometimes those amazing things aren't positive things.
Sean Patton is a very special guest. He's the tax brains. I'm not, obviously. I'm the guy that got hacked. But the next deadline is what? Do we have any minor deadlines that we should be aware of, Sean?
March 15 is the next deadline that we're really working on. If you have a partnership tax return or an S-corporation tax return, those tax returns are due on March 15. Those types of tax returns generally don't have any tax due with them at the federal level. They're just informational reporting. But the deadline is March 15 so that you can get that informational form, the K-1 form, out to the members of that organization who must report that income on their personal tax return. So they put that March 15 deadline there so that taxpayers have a month in order to collect that info and then report on their personal tax returns before those are due on April 15.
Next week, our Tax Thursday will be on a Wednesday, but it'll all be the same when we sit down and talk about tax time.
Shocker. Well, maybe the Wednesday we'll have just as nice as weather as today. We didn't end up with a lot of callers. I think everybody's, I would be too, outside, you know, playing. The snow has kept everybody in for quite some time.
Or if you're in the closet rummaging for your Bermuda shorts, which you cannot find. Just too many layers of sweaters and coats for you to find your shorts. Sean Patton, thanks for being here today. Have a great tax season.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having us.
Don't freak out and work too hard.
We won't. We'll be back next Wednesday.
You're listening.